You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to the Inside Try Show with Helen Murray.
This is the podcast that takes a deeper look at the sport
with in-depth interviews and special episodes
to keep you entertained and inspired while you're training.
And action. Okay, let's stop before I get carried away.
Hello and welcome to episode 107 of the Inside Try Show, sponsored by Resilient Nutrition, who make incredible long-range fuel nut butters. I'm Helen Murray, and each week on the Inside Try Show, I bring you awesome interviews from triathlon and beyond. And thank you very much for all of your lovely comments after the ultra marathon the other weekend. I saw the results recently. They didn't come out really soon after it, because it was so cold, and so they had to do a lot by paperwork. Anyway, I was like 8 hours, 10 minutes. Chrissy Wellington, 5 hours, 49 or something, won the whole thing, beat all the guys, beat all the women, absolutely flew past me. I think I was walking, and that really wasn't that far into it at all. She just looked so strong and happy and on it. She was going, she was not stopping. I don't think she would have talked her way around for 8 hours, which was my style. It was pretty much, yeah, just a brilliant long day out in the hills, which is, for me, exactly what I had hoped it would be. And we were so, so fortunate that the weather was kind to us as well, and really fortunate that it wasn't the day before or the day after or today, because I think we would have got just a little bit wet. I mean, we had a bit of snow, but yeah, we would have got absolutely soaking and it would have been miserable. And I'm pretty sure that we will be getting drenched when we head up to the Knoydart Peninsula for the Highland Ultra in April. I think it probably goes with the territory, to be fair. But I've been speaking actually to Dr. Greg Potter recently, not about wet feet, but some of the other things that we might want to think about as we head into and during the event as well. And Greg's the co-founder and chief science officer at resilientnutrition.com. You might remember him from back in episode 23, which was all about sleep, because he's got a PhD actually to do with sleep and the relationship between sleep, what we eat, and metabolic health as well. And so it kind of makes total sense to find out about how we can maximize our sleep going into the multi-day ultra.
So assuming that you've got a clear training plan with an appropriate taper too, and just to touch on that, I think some of the best proven taper strategies basically include a reduction in training loads and training volume specifically of up to 50% or so in the couple of weeks before the event, while maintaining training intensity. And that will ensure that you've maintained your fitness, but have reduced any residual fatigue that's accumulated during your previous training. Now, with that said, we can consider a couple of different things to attend to. One is your sleep and one is your nutrition. So first, with respect to sleep, chances are you're going to lose a bit of sleep during the event. And you can do things to prepare for that sleep loss. People will have heard of the idea of banking sleep. And the premise is quite simple. If you're going to go through a period in which you're not getting enough sleep, if you can try and catch up on sleep in advance of that and bank as much sleep as possible, then if you're spending more money by way of your extended wakefulness during the event, at least you're going into those expenses with lots of money accumulated in your account in the form of sufficient sleep. And the way that you might do that is by extending your time in bed by a reasonable amount. And what I mean by that is, let's say that habitually you spend 7 hours in bed per night. You're in bed from roughly 11 p.m. to 6 a.m. If that's true of you, then it might be that that's enough sleep for you, but it might also be that over time you've accumulated a bit of a sleep debt. And if you can then extend your time in bed by up to 30% or so, so that might entail going from 7 hours in bed per night to 9 hours in bed per night. And you could achieve that in different ways, but I would typically recommend people go to bed slightly earlier, but focus more on sleeping in slightly later in the morning. The reason being, you don't want to go to bed and lie in bed awake because you've gone to bed earlier than usual and you're not actually sleepy at that time. So even when you're trying to bank sleep, it's really important that you only go to bed when you're actually sleepy. And if you do this, then you want to remove any barriers to you getting more sleep than is habitual. And that might entail reducing your consumption of stimulants, especially late in the day. So if you're a bit of a coffee fiend, then you might focus on not consuming any caffeine any later than perhaps 8 hours before your bedtime, and reducing your total caffeine intake each day too. And please recognize that there are certain commonly consumed items that are very rich in caffeine, but people don't necessarily realize they are. And probably the main offender is dark chocolate.
No, Greg, don't tell me dark chocolate.
Yeah, that makes me unpopular. But a bar of really dark chocolate, I'm thinking, for example, of Montezuma's Absolute Black, which is 100% cocoa, can have lots of caffeine in it. So that particular product has more than 300 milligrams of caffeine in a 90 gram bar, which is about 2 Americanos. So that's a lot of caffeine, and it's quite easy to put away half a bar of the stuff. And a lot of people tend to consume it late in the day too. So that's the type of thing that you want to avoid at this time.
Sorry, Greg, I'm just going to have to pick up on the dark chocolate, right? What about Tesco, 70% dark chocolate, 2 squares of it? That's my go-to.
I don't know the caffeine content of that off the top of my head, but 70% cocoa chocolate typically will contain something like 70 to 100 milligrams of caffeine per 100 gram bar. And if 2 squares is about a quarter of the bar, then we're probably talking about something like 20 to 25 milligrams of caffeine, which isn't too much. So I think if you find yourself accidentally indulging in some of that after dinner, then try not to lose sleep over it, because it's probably not going to have a large effect. And you've probably got more important things to worry about, but hopefully the point remains. And then in terms of other things, I think spending plenty of time outdoors during daylight, especially in the first half of your waking day, is going to be helpful at this time, because what that's going to do is it's going to anchor the timing of your body's clock relatively early in the day. And that's going to help you feel sleepy and therefore fall asleep relatively early. And if you fall asleep relatively early, but you have to be up at a certain time for work the next day, then you can extend your sleep opportunity, if that makes sense. Because a lot of us have to wake to alarms in the morning. But then otherwise, set your alarm as late as possible. And if you're somebody who usually presses snooze, try to avoid that and instead just keep it as late as possible. And if necessary, stick your alarm in the other side of your bedroom so that you physically have to get out of bed to turn it off. And then you'll be up and around for the day. There is actually an alarm clock called Clocky, which will bounce around and be really annoying until you turn it off. And for people who really struggle to get out of bed because of their alarm, it can be just what they need to actually get going in the morning. So I think banking sleep is helpful. And if you can do that for at least a week, but ideally longer than that, then what you'll do is you'll buffer yourself against some of the subsequent consequences of maybe not getting enough sleep during the race itself.
Remember, you can get 10% off Resilient Nutrition's long-range fuel pouches and jars, all of their nut butters, with the code INSIDETRY10 over at resilientnutrition.com.
Time for this week's interview.
Danish triathletes Daniel Bækkegaard and Mikki Tohal join us in a conversation this week to talk us through, well, why Denmark is absolutely on fire when it comes to producing some amazing middle and long distance triathletes. You might have seen their finish line celebrations as they came third and fourth respectively at the 2021 Ironman 70.3 World Championships. That is because they are really, really good friends as well as training partners. And they met a number of years ago via the Danish Federation's youth program after switching from swimming. And they're part of this bigger training group with other Danish pros in Odense. And the guys properly warm up, I promise you, as we get into this interview. They really get into it. They start taking the mick out of each other. And Daniel as well is, I have so much respect for him, actually. He is crazily open and honest about his mental health. And Mikki as well will make sure that you have no shame next time you crack into a song on the bike. So yeah, keep with it. They warm up and they are absolutely brilliant. And by the end of it, I was like, these guys are superb. These guys are absolutely superb. And I think, especially in Denmark, they will be incredible role models for the sport. And it was brilliant to get to know them and get to know a little bit more about what makes them tick and everything else that goes with it. Okay. Daniel Bækkegaard and Mikki Tohal, welcome to the Inside Try Show.
Oh, that was pretty good.
Very good.
The best one so far.
Oh, for the pronunciation. You can go on. You both say your names properly, and then we can see how off or close I was.
Yeah. So my name is Daniel Bækkegaard.
Okay. Kind of. Mikki.
Yeah. My name is Mikki Tohalt.
Yeah. You see, I wasn't too far away. Wasn't too far away.
No, it was pretty good.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I appreciate this. So it's great to have you both on the podcast. Daniel, we'll kick off with you. And when did you guys both meet?
Yeah, well, I think we met the first time in, what, 2014 or so? 15, maybe?
Yeah, sounds about right.
You know, we're both coming from the swimming, with a swimming background, and made the transition into triathlon. And Mikki, you moved to Odense in what?
2013.
Yeah, and was kind of a part of the startup of the national squad. And then I was one of the young guys who came to the national team camp, trying to get a slot on the national team. And did not really succeed, but I did succeed in making a good friend out of Mikki. So that was times to remember, for sure.
So go on, Daniel, what happened then, if you didn't make the team?
Yeah, I was just too slow. You know, I did not really run fast enough to be in contention, but still, I loved the environment. I felt, coming from swimming, it's two very different sports when you look at how the culture is in between athletes. So I came to the national team camp and I immediately you know, coming from the outside, I obviously knew about Miki and some of the other guys who was on the national squad, and I was looking up to them massively. And coming from a swimming background, I had a very hard time. I could not just go talk to the people at the national squad, because there was this clear hierarchy and that was just not something you would do. But then immediately when I showed up at team camp, Miki and Anas and some of the other guys, they were so friendly, and I loved the environment, yeah, from the beginning. It was a crazy way of starting out, because I thought it would be more competitive than it was, and it just felt like so natural to come to practice and help each other getting better. You know, everybody is very, or was, dedicated. And obviously we were fighting for the same spots on the national team, but in another way, we were helping each other getting better every day. So that was, yeah, it was mind-blowing for me personally to experience that. And yeah, I went home and just said to my mother, I'm moving as soon as I can to Odense, because that was just, you know, that group mentality was just great. And I loved it from the first second.
Yeah, I agree very much with Daniel on this. I myself came from swimming as well. And the culture in my local swim club is just, I mean, completely different. Being one of the, like, not top-notch swimmers on the team, you were not really, kind of like, you were part of the team, but you were not really part of the team. And I kind of feel that Daniel had kind of the same. So my experience when I started out with triathlon as well was that everybody was so welcoming and so friendly and so helpful. And I was like, I was blown away. I was like, wow, is this also a possibility to have like a culture like this? And it made me fall in love with triathlon like straight away. It was, yeah, completely amazing. And I had zero doubt that I wanted to go to Odense as well as, I mean, as soon as the team started up. The triathlon world was so welcoming and so helpful, and I feel like me and Daniel are trying to continue the culture and bring that forward instead of the one we both came from earlier.
And Miki, what do you remember about Daniel that first time that you met?
Oh, yeah, no, Daniel and I, we clicked straight away. We can't say this on a podcast, it's not appropriate, but Daniel and I, we clicked straight away. I think it's better to say that we found each other on a deeper level straight away.
We share a certain personality, a certain type of humor, and yeah, from the beginning I just knew Miki, he was my go-to guy.
And sure. Miki, you've recently, I'm not going to dig deeper on that because I don't know if we want to know, but Miki, you have recently become a father. How is fatherhood?
It's good. Yeah, it is. It's good. I'm very happy to be a father. And apparently it's been really good for my triathlon career as well. Most people say that getting a child and doing a professional career is not the ideal. But apparently, no, I knew that. I have a very good girlfriend. And she has proven that even more since Carl was born. And it's been a gift for me. So I'm really enjoying fatherhood.
Is Daniel the best uncle you could ever ask for?
Oh yeah, no doubt. Uncle Daniel is the best uncle you can have. That is for sure. Daniel actually bought Carl probably the best gift he has yet received.
Yeah, so Miki and I, we share the love for the same music band or music group. And I bought a body stocking for Carl for every single day of the week with a quote on. So I think that was a pretty welcoming gift from your girlfriend, especially.
Yeah, I don't know, but my girlfriend's not too happy about it, and Carl only wears it when I'm the one who put on clothes on him, which doesn't happen too often. Yeah. But every time it happens, then Carl has the suspect body stocking. Yeah.
Yeah, and Carl knows.
Oh yeah, Carl
it's
knows.
Good quality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you spend a lot of time with each other away from training as well, outside of training?
We're starting to spend more time with each other. obviously it's pretty difficult because it's like it's a full-time job and we have a lot of traveling, and obviously we see each other every day. So the fact, you know, I would say once every second week we try to get together, and that's when once we started that actually helped our like training also, because we had something else than only training and training rides. It is for sure good training rides, and it's also it's nice to have a friend you can actually train with every day, but in the same time it's also nice to get together and eat pizza and just chill out and not being on the bike or hammering each other in the pool or whatever. So that for sure helped our relationship also with Miki's girlfriend and my girlfriend as well. So yeah, it's been very good.
Yeah, I feel like the four of us have a good time quite often. But I mean, also a lot of the time when we're out on the bike, out running, out swimming, we're also kind of like fooling around every now and then. It's not like serious business all the time. It also occasionally happens that we might talk about other stuff than triathlon, even though it doesn't happen too often.
Then again, that's also one of the things that I found very important, because when I first started joining the group, it was very, I feel like things have changed a lot the past 4 years, that we went from when we did practice or workouts together, it was more serious all the time and we had to kind of not kill each other in the sessions, but it was there was a lot of difference between the athletes. You know, I was clearly one of the most immature guys you could possibly train with.
Still is.
Still is, but that's in another way. So the fact that you felt like you always had to win the sessions, and that's one of the big things that we try to incorporate into our training group today. The fact that you have your own schedule and you have your own training plan, and we help each other to get better. But you don't have to win the sessions. You don't have to push it more than you're actually supposed to. And you know, when you hear this on the podcast, it sounds so easy. But when you're out there, and it is still your competitors, and you want to show, you know, you want to measure something, and the fact that you can have self-confidence and actually holding back and keep to your pace or to your intensity, that's something we found worked very well in our group. And also you can see, you know, all the athletes actually do very well when we try to implement that in daily training. Obviously it happens sometimes that on the last rep you would kind of race each other, but for the most part you will not destroy your own training and also the other guy's training for that matter. So you know, that comes from also knowing each other better personally and not only in the sport, that you actually, you know, we can say to each other if one of us is pushing too hard or does something stupid meanwhile training, and that can be very tough to have a relationship where you can actually discuss the other person's training midwhile the session. But I also feel that actually helps, you know, it helps our relationship, but also it also helps at races, because we will be at races in a good state and not completely burned out because we've used all our matches in training sessions. Yeah,
this is very true, and it was even more true the first years that the team started. Almost every practice was a competition. And no one wanted to lose the competition, so it was really much a battle between all of us, and I think there's just been a development on the team that everybody has matured more, and as Daniel says, that we can discuss this openly and everybody understands that if you say, hey, this is not like what's on the plan, then everybody knows, okay, this is, I mean, it's not on the plan, it's not what we're going to do, I'm going to try and stick to my own plan. And that has really, really improved and definitely helped all of us to not burn too many matches and also reduce the injuries. We used to have quite a lot of injuries, and it's actually been yeah, very few injuries on the team for the last few years.
That's amazing. Do you have the same coaches or the same coaching team, or do you have different coaches?
Yeah, so since Odense was the first national training center, we had national coaches here, and we still have those coaches around, but they are not in the federation anymore. So we are still using those coaches, and we have two different coaches. But we are free to do, yeah, choose whatever coach we want, because we also found that was the best setup for development for every athlete on the team. So what we do is kind of have the same schedule, but we can have different training sessions, workouts, whatever. And then we try to fit it as well as possible. Yeah, we are not 18 years anymore, so we do have, Miki have a son, and, you know, we have other responsibilities. So, you know, if you do some sessions alone, or if it does not really fit, then that's how it is. But we try to do the harder sessions as much as possible together.
I want to come back to, like, your younger youths as well. But, Miki, world champion, what was it like coming down that finish line for you?
Oof, that was... actually, I want to start a little bit earlier. Okay, coming into the race, my goal was to finish within the top 10. And I think after the first lap, I was in top 6. And coming down, seeing the finish line, at that point, I was actually pretty close to start crying. I think I was so tired, but I was also so happy already at that point, because I could see that, okay, top 10 was very high possibility going to happen. I think I slapped myself in the face. I said, come on, Miki, it's not over yet. And yeah, I did one more lap. I saw Daniel at the turnaround point looking like, what? I don't know, 3K before the finish line. And then coming down the hill, running down the finish chute, seeing, I think Daniel was standing there pointing at me. And I don't know. From then it went, yeah. We had a party at the finish line. I don't know. I think it was pure adrenaline. It was pure, I was just happy. It was relief. Finally to put together a race that I was really, really proud of. I feel that it has been a long time coming. It was a big relief. I was so happy, and to get to share with Daniel was indescribable. We had been together for the last 2 weeks leading into World Champs. We had lived together, eat together. We had been so close together for the whole lead up to World Champs, and then getting to share this amazing experience on the finish line with Daniel was amazing.
Daniel, did you have a little cry?
Of course. Yeah, that was just surreal. I had massive goosebumps when I looked around at the last turnaround going down the hill. I was just like, what on earth? Because I know we talked a bit what we hoped would happen in the race, before the race. And I got the feeling that Miki had kind of nothing to lose and just went into the race like, we'll see what happens. And I was so, you know, I was so happy for him, because obviously I've also been there, you know, experiencing everything that happened to Miki the past years, good and bad, and I know what it meant to him, and that was the most incredible feeling. And I was to be honest, I was more proud of him than myself, because I could kind of, I knew what it meant to him, and that was just, I get goosebumps now because it was just crazy. And I obviously, training with him every day, I knew he had it in him, and I knew he had a good performance just right around the corner, and then putting it out on a day like World Champs, that's not bad. So that was, it was an awesome, an awesome feeling to celebrate with a teammate. Yeah, that was pretty special.
It's amazing. It's so cool. It's just incredible. Daniel, did you know where Miki was? Did you know he was going to be coming in fourth?
No, I didn't. I knew when, yeah, like 2Ks left, I knew, I could see, obviously, Miki coming running, and that was when I realized he was coming in fourth. And obviously during the race, you are so focused on your own task and everything, so you're not really, you're not really realizing anything around you. But that was kind of, I think that's one of the few moments where I really remember how I felt and how, you know, the fact that I went from not being in the best mood to just explosion of happiness in the chest, and that was just, yeah, that was so nice to experience. And then also afterwards, the fact that coming home to people, it's so surreal being at practice, because obviously we're just feeling like two nerds, nobodies, and then coming to team training last Saturday, a true legend in Danish triathlon, he was there congratulating us, and it was like we walked a bit further away and looked at each other like, that's just wrong, he shouldn't do that. he's way too big of a legend to congratulate us, and it feels so strange, the fact that he actually think that we did a good job. But obviously it's third and fourth at the Worlds, so it is a pretty damn good job, but it feels so strange, you know, to I guess just getting a bit of recognition for what you've done, and the fact that it's two of us coming from Odense, that's I guess that's pretty special.
I mean, we're just two kids from Albertslund, as Daniel would say, just two kids from nowhere. That I mean, yeah, we're just me and Daniel. That's what I'm trying to say. We're nobody special. We're just two boys out there having fun, enjoying our lives, living our best life.
What difference do you think fatherhood has made to you?
The fact that he went home the night of the race and not stayed in St. George's and celebrating with me, for sure.
Yeah, someone was a little mad at me for not wanting to go to Vegas. Daniel was pretty pretty pumped about going to Vegas to do an after party.
I even called Miki's girlfriend and said, like, you cannot make this happen. He has to stay here with me.
Yeah, I don't know. It was probably not the smartest decision. I think that it was 6 hours after I crossed the finish line. I sat on a plane on my way home. Flight got delayed. I ended up sitting in Phoenix, sitting on the curb, eating a pizza. And I sat there on my own. Ate a pizza and I thought to myself, okay, I just finished fourth in the world today, and here I am sitting on the curb eating pizza. I was like, okay, I could have been in Vegas with Daniel, but here I am sitting in Phoenix, sitting on the curb eating pizza. You were asking about fatherhood.
No, that's way better. Honestly, that's way better. I think so. If you were to do it again, do you think you would stay in Vegas, go to Vegas?
Oh, I don't know. Almost the first feeling I had after I crossed the finish line was, okay, now I really just need to go home. I didn't really miss my family up until that part. I did, but not that much. But after I crossed the finish line, after all the emotions, I was like, okay, now I really want to go home. I missed my girlfriend, I missed my little boy, and I really just needed to go home. So I think, could I do it all again? I would probably do the same. I had been there for so long, and I was just... Yeah, I was missing family back home, and it was the right thing to do, and I would do it again. Maybe not the delayed flight, but if everything had worked out, it would have been perfect.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by
law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. So modest and... Yeah, just modest and...
That's also the problem sometimes. Yeah, I think one thing is we have this terrible kind of law in Denmark called Jantes Law, kind of saying you should not think you are anybody and... you should not think that you're better than anybody else and whatever. Yeah, so that law is very much challenged when you meet Sam Long, for sure. but I think that also, it makes it, you know, it shines through when you're also there as an athlete. Because the first time it's difficult to show up and say like, hey guys, I want to be world champion. But obviously, that's what we're both here for. Obviously, Magnus Ditlev and Christian Høgenhaug, they are kind of the same way. And so there must be something to it. But it also goes without saying, because I know all of us wants to beat the... Yeah, out of each other. so I think we're modest, but we also know that when it comes to it, we also... yeah, we know how to be tough to each other, to put it politely.
You did say before we hit record that you had been sort of smashing each other in the pool earlier.
Yeah, for sure.
Mickey, let's kick off with you. What are your thoughts on Strava?
I think it depends on how you use Strava. I use Strava myself. Let's start out there. I put my training up on Strava. I don't look too much at Strava. I mostly have it for fun. I know that some people like to go in and see what I do at trainings, and that's mostly the reason I have it. I follow a few of the other Danish pro triathletes, but I don't follow any other international athletes. I kind of feel that you can get they can get a little bit in your head if you look too much at what other people do on Strava. I know that has been the case for some Danish pro triathletes. Also have been a little obsessed about their own Strava, about everything has to look perfect on Strava, and that I try not to worry about. I put my training up as it is. Yeah, so I really feel that it depends on how you use Strava.
Daniel?
Yeah, so first and foremost, I think Strava is a great tool. You know, I use it myself sometimes more in a way that, you know, when you go to new places, you can look up segments and you can look up routes and all this. So just for, you know, for age groupers and for also pros for that matter, it's a great tool and it's great to have. You know, I can look up segments here in Odense or Fyn, for example, and nearby where we live, I can find segments and see what other people have been riding. And then obviously I go out and race those people, but I just don't feel like I need to put it up on Strava. But I think it's a great tool, and also just to keep the motivation going and all this. But, you know, as Mickey said, you also have to be able to handle it. And there's one thing being an amateur and then being a professional. And when you're a professional, you also have to, you have a responsibility to yourself, but also to the, you know, to the people who backs you up and to, you know, everybody around you, your family, and especially also the younger generation. And I think that's something that's massively overlooked, because as Mika said, some people do Strava in order to make it look perfect, to intimidate each other. And all of a sudden, it's more important what happens on Strava than what happens on race day. And then all of a sudden, as a professional, you have sponsors you represent, and they put effort and money into you, but does not really get the, you know, the results or the promotion they could have had if you were actually acting like a professional. So that's one thing. And then when it comes to the younger generation, I also know what we really found in our training group is that what works for me does not work for me. And obviously our level is not that, you know, there's not, you know, it can be day to day how the level is in between us. So it does not really matter what I do for Miki, because he and his coach have found out what works for him. And then, you know, if I do more hours than Miki, then all of a sudden, you know, it can be kind of the culture that more is more, and you just have to do 35 hours a week and then everything is perfect. And then Miki sees that and then he starts training 37 hours a week. And then I get mad, you know, then we mess up each other's training sessions. That's one thing. Another thing is we also have a responsibility for the new generation coming up, you know, small kids, young kids looking at Strava and sees like, okay, I have to train 30, 35 hours a week in order to get better. And what happens? They get injured, they burn out, they, you know, does not really believe in their own coaches. And all of a sudden, we do not have the new talent that we actually could have had because of some stupid, you know, social media training. So I think that's one massive problem that is pretty much overlooked, because I know a lot of people who have been intimidated by the way pros are training, and then they just try to do the same and they burn out or get injured. And I think that's such a shame, because we could have so many more strong and fast triathletes in Denmark if people just learned early on to trust their own process and, you know, just stick to their own plan. Because it doesn't really matter what works for other guys. As long as you find out what works for you, then that's a good thing. And kind of the self-belief that you're actually good enough as you are. And, you know, you and your coach will definitely find out how to make you the best athletes possible. And that's not how, you know, it's not determined how it looks on Strava.
Daniel, wise words.
Yeah, I know. I've had a lot of lonely training sessions, long rides thinking about Strava. So, no.
Did this start all after the KOM last year?
The year before that, yeah.
Go on, what happened?
Yeah, Miki took Strava segment here in.
It started with us, the two of us wanting to do it together.
Yeah, yeah. It started. We have this 20-kilometer loop where we wanted to go above 50 kilometers an hour on average or so. And we were like, oh, it could happen maybe, or it's still a stretch and all this. And then obviously Miki went out and did it by himself, not consulting me or anybody else on the team. The night before we had a training schedule saying we had to do the KOM hunting just because the weather situation was much better the night before. He raced very well and obviously broke the 50 kilometers an hour mark for the first time. And then I went out on angry raid the day after and tried to do the same, ending up absolutely smashing myself. I think I was laying in bed in the night after, just hating myself and thought about stopping my career because Miki was such a prick.
Miki, what were you thinking?
Yeah, it was a little bit sneaky.
Just not okay.
No, it was not okay. It was one of the other teammates. He knew that I wanted to do it. And it's like, Miki, the weather's going to be way better tonight than it is going to be tomorrow night. So why don't you just go out and do it tonight? I was like, nah, oh, I can't do it. I was like, okay. And, you know, he planted the thought in my head. I was like, I had a run that morning and then I had a swim. And I was like, I'm actually pretty feeling good today. So I called my coach. And I was like, okay, what do you say? Do you want to come out tonight, follow in the car? you're going to bring the family, you're going to bring my girlfriend. We can make a little event out of it. And I was like, yeah, okay, I can do that. So I snuck out, tried to not make, I mean, audience is not that big. So I was like, okay, I need to sneak out of the city. No one can see me. Snuck out with all the race gear on, put on the disc wheel, put on the fast helmet, the suit, everything. And I snuck out, went out at night. At night, it was 6 p.m., I think. And yeah, I did the loop. And I put it on Strava. And I think 5 minutes went by, and then Daniel called me. And he wrote me. I was like, fuck, I cannot look at this. I knew that it was a little bit naughty thing to do. So I was like, okay, this is... yeah.
That would have annoyed me.
Yeah, I was not that, you know, I was actually having one of the first, I think I had one of the first dates with my girlfriend at that point. And I was like, I have to put this on hold. I have to call Mickey because he's, it's just not okay.
I'm pleased that your girlfriend is still with you.
yeah, me too. I'm actually kind of surprised sometimes, but...
Daniel, I would love to pick your brains a little bit about the couple of years before 2019 and why were you so low in life and low on self-belief and things like that?
Oh, that's a deep one.
I know.
Obviously, both Mickey and I, we came to Odense with the dream of making the Olympic team. That was the initial goal objective for the national training squad.
And that would have been the Rio.
That would it, Mick?
Yeah.
I think
originally, yeah, that might have been.
Yeah, I actually don't know, but yeah, because I went to Odense in 2016, so that would be the Tokyo Olympics. You know, I was moving to. Odense starting with a training group,
yeah.
Starting at university. I did some tests early on with my coach and they were actually quite impressive. And I felt like everything was good. You know, looking back now, I was not at all mature enough to take the jump. So I did not really have control, you know, over my own life. I started... partying way more than I should because I obviously started on university and, you know, did those kind of mistakes early on. And I remember the point when it hit me, the fact that I was kind of in a downward spiral. We were at a meeting for the national team and I got the message that I was kind of cut from the Olympic squad. And from that point, you know, I was thinking everything was pretty good. And then all of a sudden it started to, okay, things are maybe not that good. Because I'm not in the national team, or I was on the national team, but not on the Olympic team anymore. And obviously, I still wanted to compete. I wanted to go to the Olympics and I wanted to do good. Yeah, then there is this kind of black period of my life I can't really remember a lot of. I was isolating myself from kind of everybody else and did not really feel happy at all. I gained a lot of weight and, you know, I raced one season. I had these asthma attacks coming all the time and I DNF'd more races than I finished, and the ones I finished I did terrible at. So my own, you know, the picture I had of myself was definitely not the real one, or I don't really know how to put it. But I went into a pretty dark hole and I was not that happy at all. And then in 2018, I was called into to the national what is it called director sportif, and then I was cut from the national team because of lack of race results, which looking back was fair enough, because I did not do anything good at all the last 2 years. But at that point, I was very sad about it, and I felt like I had actually nothing. And, you know, I started, things at university did not go well, and everything kind of was just a negative downward spiral. And I afterwards had a chat with my coach, and we decided that maybe it was time to just try something new, see what would happen if I signed up for 70.3, and then we'll, yeah, take it from there. And I, yeah, just started doing a 70.3, and it went decent. And then it was not great, but it was better than it was before. I got a contract where I could earn some money, and, you know, I could pay my rent and the food and all that, which made my mother pretty happy, because obviously she also knew that everything was not great. Yeah, and then, you know, 2019 came, and I raced a couple of decent races, but I had an enemy in roundabouts, and I had, like, how many crashes was it, Mickey? Like 4 crashes in roundabouts or so. You know, I had no self-esteem, no self-confidence, and it was kind of a stigma for a kind of professional. I was not 100% professional, but still, kind of professional athlete, the fact that you're not 100% a racehorse, and you're not there, like, you do not perform in school, you do not perform when you're supposed to, and all that. And I took that very hard on myself. So I started going to a psychiatrist regularly, and, you know, just figuring out how my path is supposed to be. Did a lot of good, and then, you know, I raced Ironman Klagenfurt, ended up winning, and that was the moment, kind of a wake-up moment where, you know, for the first time, I was actually proud of something I had done, and that came out on the finish line. You know, afterwards, also just sitting there in my hotel room thinking about the years before and all that was terrible, to be honest. You know, thinking of, I had like 3 weeks where I almost did not come out of my room, just with the blinds down, and, you know, I hated everything, to be honest. From that, and then winning the Ironman, that was, yeah, it was tough to remember, but still it was a great feeling of kind of overcoming that period of time. And then finally being able to actually be proud of what I've done. So that was a long story.
No, but seriously, Daniel, people, like, respect to you for actually saying all of that. And I think if people now were to go and rewatch your celebration on the finish line at Ironman Austria in 2019, you can understand every kind of physical movement that you made in your body, just everything that you had been through in those years prior. It was all coming out.
Yeah, and I also, actually coming back to the World Championships, I think that's also a huge part why I was so happy for Miggy, because I know he have also struggled. You know, everybody in our team have struggled, and all other athletes are also struggling with something some point in their lives. And I think recognizing that and also respecting each other for getting out of bed and you know, overcoming those obstacles, you know, that's the real win of a situation like that at World Championships. And that was what I was the most happy for Miggy, because people do not really see what happens behind the curtain. You know, I take myself sometimes looking at American football or something and thinking their lives must be brilliant. And also just the fact that, you know, looking at 2 years ago, looking at people who is maybe on the kind of point of their career as I am now, and I was thinking, like, okay, they must feel so great, and everything is effortless and all that. And I can tell you challenges always comes in funny shapes and forms, and it happens to everyone. So I felt it difficult being a professional athlete and dealing with, I would say, mental challenges. But, you know, everyone deals with it. It's just not something that people talk about. And I get why people are not talking about it, but I think a lot of people should also know that it's not only you, it's everybody else as well.
And Mickey, you hearing Daniel then talking about all of that, like how does it make you feel? Because obviously you've been there with him since you met in 2014.
Yeah, I mean, I of course know Daniel's story. I know what he's been through. I know how he have developed. And yeah, Daniel said earlier that he was proud of me. And I must say that I'm really proud of Daniel and the process that he has been through, the way he has matured. Of course, as an athlete, but so much more as a person. The Daniel you see now versus the Daniel I saw 7 years ago is like black and white. Yeah, then I just think that both Daniel and I, we maybe don't possess a huge amount of talent. We're both grinders. We do the hard work every day, and we enjoy the hard work. You would say that we have a talent for the hard work, and not so much the talent for the sport itself. We both do excessive amounts of practice in order to become better, and that was also the case for us once, like when we were swimmers. And I think that's also partly why we're doing so good, because we're not used to having everything come very easy to us. We've been used to, from a young age, to have to work hard for it. And I think that has really helped the both of us to achieve a very high sporting level.
Daniel, weren't you living on like oatmeal or something like that? Like very basic food?
I had to pay bills and everything else. So I had 2 months where, yeah, I had oatmeal for breakfast and lunch, and maybe there would be a bit of money for some eggs for dinner, but that was kind of it. But as Mickey also says, that's just, you know, I've always thought like some people have things tougher or life tougher than I have and face tougher challenges, you know, and I kind of feel like when you go into things with that perspective, it just makes, you know, of course I'm gonna overcome this and kind of look at it positively instead of just sit down and cry about it. And that also comes back to what Miki said, as you know, we things are not coming easily for the both of us. So that's just kind of how we are brought up. And you can say a lot of things about the environment in Danish swimming, but when it comes to it, I'm actually pretty happy about how things were for me, because I've always learned to work hard in order to get what I wanted. And just, you know, when you face challenges, then you just have to work harder and overcome it. But yeah, that period was not the most enjoyable, for sure.
And Mickey, do you have a little bit of an annoying habit of singing on the bike?
It's definitely not annoying. I don't know why anyone would say that.
Do you get everyone singing?
Rarely, but it does happen occasionally. I love to sing on the bike. I don't know. I love it. Even when I'm out on my own, I love to sing. And I actually don't sing that much elsewhere, I think. I'm not kind of like, I know people sing in the shower, but I sing when I'm out on my bike, and I don't. Sometimes I sing for Carl, but actually my girlfriend told me the other day, you never sing for Carl. So I don't know. Maybe I only sing when I'm out on the bike. I don't know. But I love to sing on the bike.
And what kind of songs are you singing on the bike?
Oh, every kind of song. Whatever song pops into my head. One day I can be out, I can be humming Vivaldi, like something from the Four Seasons. And one day it can be the most badass rap song you can think of. And it can be everything in between that. I mean, that's... Yeah, no, I don't know.
The worst part about it is when I'm in the front and pushing hard, and you can just hear from the back, that not that Mickey is in the back often, but if he's there whistling or singing or something, seriously, I can, sometimes I'm this close to just stop the bike and punch him in the face.
Oh, I'm gonna do it so much more often now. I had no idea you felt that way. I'm gonna do it all the time now. Just wait. Next time we race each other, you'll just hear me yelling at the back, just singing this. I don't know. I'll find some song and I'll sing it very, very loudly during the race.
Oh, guys, you know what? I think you've earned a few more fans from this podcast. You've both been utter superstars, and I've really enjoyed talking to you both. So thank you so, so much.
Likewise.
It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Inside Tri Show. If you want to get in touch or get a little bit more information on anything, then reach out to Helen on Instagram or Twitter at Inside Tri Show.
As always, please do share this episode. Maybe you've taken something from it. Maybe, like me, you are filled with so much respect for Daniel for opening up about that. Maybe it kind of makes you think, wow, if he can talk about it, then maybe I can talk about it as well. So yeah, do let us know, share it, send it to someone else who you think might benefit from it as well. Or if you just like it and you want to shout from the rooftops about it, that would be cool too. And if you do like what I do, then yeah, you can always buy me a glass of vino, buy me a coffee every month over at patreon.com/InsideTriShow. And if you want to get in touch, it's helen@insidetrishow.com. So thank you again to resilientnutrition.com for sponsoring the podcast. You can get 10% off with the code InsideTry10. You can also get a discount at 33fuel.com. They do amazing, yummy energy bars and protein bars and daily greens. Just use the code InsideTry33. And then over at comfuel.co.uk, you'll get some money off with the code InsideTry. So until next week, happy training, enjoy, and we'll speak again then.
Social Podcast Network.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.